You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior cycle and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier. Hello and welcome back to the Study Clicks podcast. I'm Luke and I'm joined by my co-host Erin.
Hey guys.
And today we have a very special guest, our Study Clicks expert English teacher, Laura Daly, who will be sharing some valuable advice for the upcoming Leaving Cert English exam. We asked you guys to send in your burning questions about all things Leaving Cert English, and today we'll be discussing the most popular ones with Laura to help you prepare in the final weeks leading up to the exam. Laura, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Hi guys, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Would you mind giving us a bit of background about yourself, just for the listeners? How long have you taught English and what made you want to be an English teacher in the first place?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So I've been teaching English since 2007, and I kind of always in the back of my mind, I loved English in school, always, you know, really wanted to pursue it in college. But I ended up doing a business degree and then realizing that wasn't for me after year one. And I went back and studied English in college then and kind of really followed my passion into teaching after that. So it's always been there. I've loved reading, loved English since I was in school.
That's great.
So I suppose at this point in the year, we're coming into the very last term kind of before the exams start. And a question that you're probably well used to getting is it too late to kind of start really cracking down on the study now? So what kind of advice would you have for students who feel like they haven't done enough study so far? And how, like, do you think it's too late to turn it around, or do they still have loads of time to kind of get to where they need to be?
Yeah, no, it's never too late to start studying, even if you feel you've done absolutely, you know, very little or the bare minimum up until now. You know, these final weeks are really crucial weeks, and you can be really strategic about your study. You know, you can focus on a key area in paper one, a key area in paper two. What I would say to students out there is focus on the two questions in those two papers that are worth the most marks. So in paper one, that's the composition. It's 100 marks. It's 25% of the exam. You know, a lot of students think that maybe it's a section of the exam that they can't study for. That is absolutely not true. There's loads of ways that you can study for the essay. And I would really, you know, if I felt that I was behind, I would focus on trying to nail my study on the essay. And then you're going in with a really strong 25% in paper one. In terms of paper two, a lot of students tend to focus on poetry, I think, because there's so much in the poetry course. It can seem maybe overwhelming and they feel they need to really focus on that. My advice would be to focus on the comparative study, which is, again, it's 70 marks. It's worth the most in paper two. I would also, if I am going to look at poetry at this stage, narrow it down to two poets. Absolutely don't look at anybody else. You know, my top tips for this year would be Smith and Boland. So if you've covered those, focus on in paper two, the comparative, and then Smith and Boland. And that's kind of how I would be at this stage of the year. I'd be strategic about it.
Okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Kind of not trying to revise absolutely everything. Yeah, be kind of smart with your study.
Yeah, like maybe you know yourself that maybe Shakespeare is your weakest. And in that case, then you focus on the Shakespeare. It'll be individual for everyone. But, you know, definitely don't be spending a lot of time on, say, you know, the unseen poem or things like that. I would definitely spend time on either the two questions that are worth the most marks or the one that I really know, look, I wasn't really giving Shakespeare, say, my all during the year. So I'm going to focus on that now for a little bit.
Yeah. And I think something that a lot of students struggle with as well, even when they're kind of dividing up their time to study, they also struggle with dividing up their time in the exam itself, kind of spending too long on certain questions. I know it can be kind of very tempting to like spend the entire exam answering the question with the most marks, but do you have any tips for kind of the timing of the exam, or can you walk us through the timing in the exam?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a huge part of the exam is exam technique and sticking really rigidly to your timing. I've had students in the past who were amazing students, but because they were, you know, very talented, they maybe spent too much time on one section and then they lost out in another section. So timing in a way can be almost as important as your ability and your knowledge going into any exam, not just English. So paper one has a very set timing. You've got 20 minutes for reading time. So what I would say is absolutely read all of the reading comprehensions, because paper one, as we know, has a theme, an overarching theme, and that theme is contained in all three reading comprehensions. So even though you're going to only end up answering on one, reading all three is going to generate ideas. It's going to calm you down. So you have a full 20 minutes allotted to reading of paper one. So use that 20 minutes. in terms of then the reading comprehension, once you've read everything and you've decided on what part A and what part B you're going to do, the reading comprehension, you've got 35 minutes to answer that. And then you've got 35 minutes to answer your part B. And always remember, do not answer the same part A and part B. You have to answer on a different reading comprehension from the part B below. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Then in terms of the essay, as I said earlier, it's 25% of the entire exam. You have an hour and 20 minutes to do that, including planning time. So that's a lot of time. You know, the English exam, you are under time pressure, but I feel that a lot of students could write a really, really good essay in an hour and 20 minutes. So don't panic when you first approach the essay. You know, you have time, take your time with it and really craft it, is what I'd say.
Yeah,
yeah,
that makes sense. It kind of is, like I said, kind of very tempting to just spend a lot of time on the one thing that you kind of maybe struggle with. But yeah, it's really important to kind of stick to the timing.
Yeah, exactly. And then paper two is a lot easier in that it's 200 marks and it's 200 minutes. So if you get confused at all, just think a mark a minute. Now, what I would say is maybe give yourself 5 minutes kind of flexibility time reading the paper and things like that. So I would spend, you know, 50 minutes on studied poetry, 15 minutes on unseen poetry, 60 to 65 minutes on Shakespeare, and then 65 to 70 on the comparative. So if you're at all flustered in paper two, just remember a mark a minute and that will help guide you.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think about it. And I think it's so important when you're in the exam to just think about how you can be as strategic as possible. So obviously timing is like a huge part of that. But as well as that, is there any kind of order that you'd recommend going about answering paper two specifically? Like, would you recommend going through it in order, or is there anything that you'd like recommend going to first and getting out of the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is absolutely an order that you should answer paper two in, and it's going to be individual for each student. So you should always start paper two with your strongest section. So if you're strongest on poetry, start with that. If you're strongest with Shakespeare, start with that. The reason for this is you want to set yourself up for success in the exam. So if you start with your strongest, it's going to give you confidence. You remember your quotes. You know, it starts you off on a good foot. So I would say start with your strongest, and that will put you into a really good flow for the rest of the exam. So that will be individual for everyone. Then you actually do your weakest second. So you're in this sort of really good momentum. And then you think, okay, before I get too tired at the end of the exam, you know, where maybe my concentration starts to wane a little bit, I'm going to focus on the question that I think might be most challenging for me. And you're in a sort of headspace of flow at this stage. So that should work really well for that challenging question, whatever section that might be for you. And then you finish with whatever is last. Very, very last now, I would say, is do the unseen poem. So the unseen poem, it's 20 marks. It's not that much. You'd be surprised how much you could write under pressure in 5-10 minutes at the end. So always finish with the unseen poem. But definitely strongest first, weakest second, whatever is next, and then the unseen poem.
Okay, that's really interesting advice, kind of to do like strongest first, then, you know, yeah, you kind of automatically think, okay, strongest, then maybe next, my next strongest, yeah, and then leave the weakest to last. It makes sense though, because the less kind of under time pressure, your weakest is just going to be weaker.
Yes,
you know, you're
going
to like struggle a lot to get it down, what the little that's stuff it. You have down on the page.
Yeah, exactly. And you might start to panic a little bit, you know, so I think it's just important, you know, to tackle that difficult one second when you're still in sort of a fresh enough mind frame.
So you kind of briefly touched on it there when you're talking about the composition, but with planning an answer in an exam, do you have any specific advice for that? I know like a lot of students and myself included, when I was doing the Leaving Cert, like you kind of just, you feel like you need to start writing as soon as you get the paper. You don't really have time to plan things out and think things out in great detail. So do you have any kind of tips for planning an answer in the exam?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this kind of links back to what I was talking about earlier about exam technique and timing. The other absolutely essential component of an exam is taking the time to plan. The student who takes the time to plan is going to do much, much better even than the most able student who just dives straight into the question. So you really do have to have a bit of self-control in the exam and stop yourself from jumping in straight away. You know, planning should be an integral part of your study at this stage. Every question that you are looking at now on the Leaving Cert Past exam papers as we get closer to the exam, you should always start your answer with spending a good 5-10 minutes planning. And in the exam, hopefully then, because you've been planning as part of your study, you'll be a lot quicker planning on the day. So the thing that I really focus on with my students, in especially in paper two, would be the creation of what I call topic sentences. So all this is a main sentence that is focused on both the study text, whatever that text is, the poetry or the comparative text or Shakespeare, and then linking that to the question. So your very first port of call is to highlight on the day all of those keywords from the question and try and figure out very quickly, you know, what is the examiner code? So you can get all the examiner codes from the previous marking schemes from previous years. And all that is very simply is the first letter of the keywords in the question. And the examiner literally, as they're reading, goes through and tries to find those keywords or synonyms of those keywords in your main sentences of each paragraph and then adds marks to your answer. So if you are constantly repeating those keywords throughout your answer, you're going to get a lot of marks. So you need that in your planning. You need to look at, okay, these are the keywords in the Shakespearean question. And then very, very briefly, you're going to write down maybe 5 bullet points focused on the question using those keywords. And those 5 bullet points become your main sentences for your essay. So the bullet points make sense when looking at the question, even without writing nothing else, if you know what I mean. So I would really focus in paper two on the idea of topic sentences. Now, planning for paper one is very, very different. It's much more creative. In terms of planning for the composition, one thing I really try and get my students to do coming up to the exam is to try and read newspapers a little bit, current affairs, so that when you're sitting there brainstorming for your personal essay or your debate or your discursive essay, you can draw on things that are in the news currently. You can give your ideas a little bit of, you know, a contemporary edge. You can show the examiner that you are well read, that you're up to date, and using those things to generate ideas, you know, whether it's even creatively, if you take a story that's been in the news and you turn that into a short story, or you reference it in terms of the speech. So in terms of planning for the composition on paper one, you know, have read up a little bit, have ideas pre-prepared. There's a certain list of topics that come up all the time in the theme for paper one. So things like education, technology, family and friends, connection. So have thought about those ideas before you go into the exam. Have some sort of, I suppose, prepared things that if those things come up, you can reference them or change them around a little bit to suit the question.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I hadn't kind of thought of having to practice planning as well, because it is kind of part of your timing. You know, you'd practice an essay to get the timing down. You should also practice the planning as well, because you don't want to spend too much time planning or too little.
Yeah, absolutely. The more you integrate it into part of your study, the quicker you'll be then in the exam at it. So I would spend classes and classes on, you know, just planning. It's so essential. Mm.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the questions that we got that, I mean, we got flooded with this question, and I'm sure you're sick of hearing it, is how long should your answers be? I know it probably is very much how long is a piece of string, but is there a general rule of thumb that you should follow in your exam?
Yeah, you know, if you're going for H1, there is definitely sort of an A4 page number that I would say to students to give them a guidance. Now, I will say that the exam booklets are actually smaller than your general A4 copy. So this can be, you know, really confusing for students. Then they go in and the pages are much smaller and they're thinking, do I have to write less? Was she talking about? So just as a helpful tip for your students, there are actually empty exam booklets that you can get that are the same size as the English paper Leaving Cert exam copies that you can buy. I'm not sure how much they are, but if you want to practice writing in those booklets, a few of my students do that currently to try and get, you know, the length of pages kind of right, let's say. So again, this is a guideline, and it depends on the size of your writing and things like that. But if you're going for H1 in terms of the composition, you're looking at 5 to 7 A4 pages, standard A4 pages. So then you might add a couple pages on because the exam booklets are smaller. In terms of the reading comprehension, the part 1 and 2 should be 3/4 of an A4 page, and the part 3, the 20 marker, that should be an A4 to an A4 and a quarter. In terms of your part B then, that should be 2.5 A4s minimum. Paper 2 then, if we're looking at Shakespeare, you're looking at 4 to 5 A4 pages. In terms of the comparative, again, 5 A4 pages, 6 if you could, you know, again, depending on your writing. And then the poetry would be 4 A4 pages, with the unseen coming in at around 1.5 pages. So I hope that now, again, I hope that doesn't freak people out and they start thinking, God, I've never written a 7-page composition in my life and I'm not going to. And that's absolutely fine. That's for students who, you know, write really quickly, get a lot done, or in a state of flow. So, you know, if you only write 4 pages, I would say in the small Leaving Cert exam booklets, though, 5 pages for the composition would be a good aim.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because I know a lot of the time it's difficult to even know, like, are you writing too much for something or too little? Yeah. So just kind of having something to base your answer off
is
really helpful when you're like planning and everything. Yeah. Just in terms of kind of what content should be included in your answers, and how much of it, when you're looking at the comparative question specifically, I know on a lot of the questions it says to discuss at least 2 texts that you've studied for your comparative. Would you recommend, like, do you think you need to answer on all 3 texts really, or would you get away with just doing the 2 like it's suggested?
Yeah, I get asked this all the time in class as well. And the answer is you will absolutely not be penalized for only answering on 2. You know, they wouldn't say at least 2 texts if they didn't mean it. That would be really misleading of them. So you can definitely, if you want to, you know, be strategic and you want to leave out one of your texts, or you really remember it less, or, you know, we talked earlier about people who feel they haven't studied enough and they're kind of coming to the end now, what should they do? You can absolutely leave out one of the texts. Now, having said that, on the flip side of that, if you don't know your texts in a lot of depth, I would almost advise you to include the 3rd text, because then you have something else to reference. It's taking up more time of your answer. So you could almost get away with being less detailed if you answer on all 3 texts, because you're constantly weaving the 3. If you're only answering on 2, then the examiner is going to expect more detail about those 2. So again, it's kind of up to the individual which they would prefer. But, you know, I have some students who already know I'm only answering on 2, and that's what they're focusing their study on, and then others who are saying I'm definitely doing 3. So whichever you're deciding to go with, and you can just decide on the day as well. Don't feel pressure to make that decision now. If the question for the 2 suits better, you know, go for that. But definitely you won't be penalized for it.
Kind of on that as well, I know this is very much probably like depends on the question or like what kind of suits the students on the day, but is there any kind of like, would you recommend yourself to students, like, should they answer the 70 mark question or the 30 and 40 question? Like, which one do you think generally would be the kind of smartest option to go for? Because I know for me, like, it very much depends, because I used to always only do the 70 marker, like when we'd be practicing in class or whatever. And then come the day of the actual exam, I wasn't so keen on that one, so I answered the 30 and 40. But is there any that you'd kind of prefer for students to answer that you think is like the kind of wisest way to divide up your time?
Yeah, I suppose, you know what, again, it will depend on the question on the day. So any advice I give here, if you, as you say, you prefer the 70 marker and then you go in on the day and the 30-40 is much more, you know, suits what you've learned for the comparative section, 100% change your mind. But what I would say is, if you struggle a little bit with the comparative, and a lot of students do for various reasons, I would go for the 30-40 split, because it means that you can just deal with one text on its own in the 30 marker. And also it breaks the essay down. You know, earlier I said that the comparative should be 5 to 7 pages. If you're doing the 30-40, the 30 marker is 2 A4 pages. That's really manageable in your head. So if you prefer working in kind of smaller chunks, the 30 mark seems much more, I suppose, psychologically manageable for some students. And then in the 40, again, you have to do your comparisons for a lot less. So it's 3 A4 pages of comparing. Now, if you're a stronger student and you find that when you're in the middle of an essay, you kind of are in a state of flow, as I've kind of said before, then I would say go for the 70 marker. You know, then you're not kind of chopping and changing. You can really get into it. So I would say, sometimes for the stronger students, the 70 marker can, I suppose, go better with their writing style is kind of how I would put it. But if you're struggling with English, I would say aim for the 30-40. But that means then definitely doing the 3 texts. That's the only thing.
With the kind of just briefly touching on something that you mentioned, with the 3 texts, you kind of said you might actually get more out of choosing to do the 3, because you can kind of bring in what little you do know about the 3rd one if you're really not sure on it. So does that kind of imply then that you don't need to speak about all 3 equally? Can you kind of focus mainly on 2 and bring in elements of a 3rd, or, you know, kind of focus should it really just be like focus on two, bring in elements of a third, or should it be divided equally?
Yeah, no, there's absolutely no reason to divide your essay equally at all. When I'm okay. studying the comparative, I always use, say, what's called an anchor text. So the anchor text, in most cases, it turns out to be the novel. And that's kind of the text that I root all of my main points in. And then I spend the rest of my paragraphs weaving in, say, the other two texts. But for some of the texts, some of the points, say if I'm taking cultural context as a random example, and I'm dealing with the issue of gender in two of the texts, and that really goes with two of the texts, sometimes that doesn't fit in so well with the third text. So you can just contrast that third text quite briefly, talk about how this heading or gender isn't really an issue in this text. So you, when you're doing your comparison, don't forget that it's about focusing on similarities, but also on differences. And sometimes those differences are that whatever feature you're looking at doesn't feature as strongly in this text. So, you know, I would always often find that students kind of, for whatever reason, refer to the play the least, you know, whatever their play is. And that can be fine as well. So don't feel any pressure to have exactly the same amount written about all three texts. Yes, it's important if you're doing a question and including all three, to focus on all three at different times, but some points for some questions will lend itself better to some of the texts, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, and just kind of when you mentioned there kind of weaving in, you know, the other two texts into your anchor text, what kind of language of comparison would you be using kind of to weave them in? Like, you know, rather than just writing maybe three paragraphs on three different things, like, you know, to kind of tie them together. Do you have any advice on how to tie them together better?
So definitely, I think here is where we could use AI to help us. So I think if you go onto any sort of ChatGPT and say, give me a list of comparative phrases for use in the Leaving Cert comparative English essay, you're going to get a really nice list of synonyms there. Earlier on, I was talking about the examiner's code and the marking scheme. One thing that the examiners do is when they're correcting the comparative, every time you use a word of comparison, they'll put a little like a mark in the margin. So a C and a plus. So after they've corrected that essay and looked at language and purpose and everything, they will go back and count how many times you have compared. So those little words, rather than putting analysis side by side, by weaving, using a list of words, say, that you found on ChatGPT in comparison with, conversely, all of these synonyms, you're going to gain much more marks. So be really, really aware of that in that section, using those words constantly as you're analysing your texts.
Yeah, I think it's really important to just kind of, above anything else, to be smart with your language in terms of how you go about answering questions. And I think that's particularly important if like a question comes up that you're not really too sure how to answer or like how to go about it. So particularly for the Shakespearean text, how would you kind of deal with if a Shakespeare question comes up that you haven't really prepared for, like if it's to do with a specific character and you haven't really studied them much, or like a theme or something that you're not too confident in? What do you think is the best way to kind of go about that?
Yeah, I think sometimes when students open the exam and they maybe have been predicting something that could come up, they panic if they don't see the exact names, as you say, of characters that they've been expecting or the exact theme. The one thing I would say is that, you know, teachers spend a huge amount of time on Shakespeare. So the stuff that you've covered will probably get you through on stuff that you think you might not have covered per se. So for example, if you really think that this year the women in Lear are going to come up, Goneril, Regan, Cordelia, a lot of people betting on seeing those names, and instead you actually see the theme of good and evil, and you're going, my God, I haven't done the theme of good and evil. Well, if you break it down, the characters, Goneril and Regan, they're evil and Cordelia is good. So all you do is you change your notes, change the focus of your notes to good and evil, and use the same supporting evidence. So it's all about using supporting evidence that you've already prepared and sort of just changing the focus then of your topic sentences to suit the question. So, you know, if you think that you haven't studied for something, just give yourself a minute to go over, okay, well, what is it from Shakespeare that I have studied, and jot down all the notes and think, okay, well, now how can I change these ideas that I already have, that I know, that I have quotes for, and how can I work them into the question that's in front of me? So I think students are oftentimes equipped with much more knowledge than they give themselves credit for, and they just lose their confidence because they're in an exam situation. You know, my main tip for going into any exam is use it as an opportunity to show off whatever you know. You know, you're never going to get the perfect question or the perfect exam, but you're probably going in armed with a lot of information. And just be clever about how you change that information to suit the questions, and you'll be absolutely fine. So as well, it's a bit of a, I find with Shakespeare as well, it's a bit of a lack of a confidence thing that, you know, students overly focus on the perfect question rather than thinking, okay, I have so much knowledge from 2 years of studying this. How can I just readjust that knowledge?
If you're serious about your exams, StudyClicks Premium is the best way to study. You'll get access to every exam question by topic, marking schemes and solutions, plus exclusive mock exam questions and papers. No more scrambling for the right questions, just structured exam-ready prep. And for podcast listeners, here's €10 off with this code PODCAST10 at checkout. Go to studyclicks.ie and get your upgrade today. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a bit of a different kettle of fish when it comes to poetry then, because like you said, kind of Shakespeare, you know, it's all the questions, they're going to be about the same play. You can maybe bend what you have into the question that you're given. But if you've kind of banked on or know two poets much better than the rest and you don't get the poets that you like, kind of what advice would you have for students that open up their paper and see that?
Yeah, you know, that is tricky. And again, the first thing would be not to panic. Everybody has their preferred poets and everybody has the names that they want to see on the paper. Now, having said that, again, you will have spent a lot of time revising poets, even if in the back of your mind you've thought, I'm not really going to focus on this poet. You will have spent a lot of time in class going over these poems, going over things. And remember, at the end of the day, all you need to answer on is four poems from a poet. You know, the idea would be that you'd answer in depth on four and maybe refer briefly out to one or two more. But all you need is four poems. And then the other thing that you're being tested on is, you know, your ability to use the terminology associated with poetry. So say if you only have a couple of quotes from a couple of poems of a poet you haven't really studied, you know, really spend time using simile, metaphor, assonance. Try and show the examiner, you know, maybe they've realized from reading your essay that this isn't your ideal poet, but you're showing them, actually, I have a lot of knowledge about poetry through the terminology that I'm using. So maybe your quotes are a bit sparse, but maybe your analysis of the overarching themes, maybe your use of poetic terminology, all of that will bring your answer up. So again, don't panic if you're a bit short on the quotes. Kind of play to your other strengths then is what I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I think definitely it's important to kind of remind yourself of that. Like, you've spent loads of time studying these particular poets or whatever the case may be. A lot more is probably stuck with you than you kind of realize. And even in terms of like quotes from poems or whatever, like I'm sure from hearing them recited over and over, like you have like bits that stick in your head. But I suppose kind of one big question that we get asked a lot is, do you have any advice for kind of anybody who might struggle to remember quotes? Like, how would you advise going about learning quotes off? And also, how important is it that they're exactly right?
Yeah, you know, the quote section of the paper is, it's really tough because you have to include them, and students do find it really difficult to learn quotes off. So there's different sort of things that I would advise. So for some students, I think if you're, you know, someone who learns through writing, I would definitely say, you know, spend a bit of time writing them out over and over again, as tedious and boring as that is. You know, again, you can be strategic with what quotes you pick. In terms of poetry, I think that students learn too many quotes, that a lot of the time, you can choose very strategic lines from a poem and only have about four or five from each poem, and that will suit any question. So first of all, be strategic about it. Then, you know, if you're the sort of learner who learns through writing, I would write them out. If you're an oral learner, it's literally a case of saying them out loud over and over again. I do have some creative students who, you know, put them to music and things like that. And, you know, as silly as it sounds, but it works. It works for people who learn that way. So each person has their own individual style of learning. Some people put them up on the wall in front of them. And every time they look up when they're studying English, they're there. So they're kind of going in subconsciously a little bit as well. So there are lots and lots of ways that you can learn them. It is a little bit tedious, but it is necessary. But again, particularly with poetry, I would say pare them back a little bit. And sorry, you also asked do you need to have them exactly right? So what I would say is always have a go. You know, if you think you know a quote, have a go at it. The other thing I would say is a lot of times students remember half quotes and then they think, well, I'm not going to get it fully right, so I'm not going to include it. So my advice would be to weave it in as part of a sentence. So the half that you do really know and you really remember, you know, put the other part outside of quotations and weave the bit that you definitely do know into the text in quotations. So the examiner will be much more impressed if they see these little snippets of quotations throughout your answer, rather than just, you know, oh, I haven't included it because I don't really remember it. I would always say have a go, include it, and particularly put the bit that you are sure about in quotation marks and maybe leave the other bit out as in your own words.
Yeah, that's really important, just to get as much as you can remember down rather than like just completely leaving it out
because exactly.
You're not too sure of it. Would you ever be penalized for getting a quote kind of wrong? Like, because I know that's something a lot of students would be worried about, like, is if you kind of remember it slightly off, like would the examiners take marks off you for that, or would that be something that would really matter?
Yeah, no, in terms of the examiners and the correctors, they're always trying to give you marks. So it's not a case of penalizing somebody who, you know, is getting them wrong, like taking away marks or anything like that. You just won't gain any extra marks if you have an essay that's full of entirely wrong quotation. So that's why I would say have a go.
I know you've kind of briefly touched on it before about the composition, but a lot of people were kind of asking, a lot of people were just asking, should I do the short story or the opinion piece or the personal essay? Is it kind of something that you should really work out with your teacher, or is it kind of something that you can choose on the day? I feel like it might be risky to choose it on the day, but say if the titles weren't what you were looking for in one, but maybe they suited what you prepared better in another.
Yeah, so definitely this is an individual conversation with your teacher. Your teacher knows your writing style the best, has been correcting your work for two, maybe more years if they've been teaching you for junior cycle. So they will have, you know, the best insights as to what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. So I would sit down with my students and talk. I would let them, you know, suggest to me, first of all, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that, because what you feel drawn to, your gut and your initiative, is also worthwhile. So if your teacher says to you, definitely do the personal essay, but you feel, you know, take their advice on board, but also trust your own gut as well. So I would go into the exam with two compositions really well prepared in my mind. So the personal essay is a really popular one. The short story is also really popular, but I would have two that, you know, I've practiced planning, that I have a few ideas already sort of in my mind that I could use depending on the question. So I would go in with two, and then I would see, okay, which one suits me better on the day. I wouldn't narrow it down to one. You definitely will feel panicked then. But for example, the two most popular ones, which are probably the personal essay and the short story, very often there's two options for both of those on the paper on the day. So even if you don't like one personal essay, the other is a really strong option for you. What I would say is that there's no easy composition. Sometimes students think that the personal essay is easy, and in a way it is, because you're talking about your own experiences and things like that. But the personal essay has to be really authentic and really unique. So don't shy away from doing maybe some of the more, I suppose, traditionally what students would think of as challenging essays in terms of the speech or the debate. Because for the speech or the debate, you know, if you've got a sort of mathematical mind, there's persuasive techniques that you can learn off to use. There's sort of a formula to the speech or the debate that there is less of a formula to the personal essay. So again, don't sort of limit yourself by thinking everyone says the personal essay is easiest. That's not the case. It depends on your writing style.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's definitely really important to not limit yourself and to keep your options open in terms of the composition. And I think it's a great opportunity that students have to kind of show off their use of vocab and their command of the language and things like that. And this kind of goes across the board. But how do you kind of draw the line between using great vocab and like showing off to the examiner what you're capable of, and then having the language of your answer just being too kind of complex and, you know, like kind of, yeah, just like overcomplicating it. Like, how do you kind of draw the line between that?
Yeah, this happens a lot, actually. And it happens a lot with students at the beginning of fifth year when they're trying to, you know, really, in terms of the marking scheme, the PCLM marking scheme, which is purpose, coherence, language and mechanics, they're really focusing on that L and the language and trying to use all these, you know, amazing words that they've learned and stuff, which is really, really admirable. But it does take a bit of time to, you know, what I call get control of your own language. So that means, yes, using all this amazing vocabulary that you have access to, but making sure that when you're trying to increase your L grade, your language grade, that you're not decreasing your C grade, which is the coherence grade, you know, so it is definitely a balance. One sort of tip that I have for students who have a really strong vocabulary and want to show it off is absolutely go for it. But make sure that in your essays that you are have, you know, you have your long sentences with your great vocabulary, but really dot in really short, snappy sentences as well. This is just an effective writing technique for all students, to be honest, not just for those with really sort of fantastic vocabulary. But you need to give the examiner a moment to digest what you've said. So having a mixture of varying your length of sentences between really long, more complex, more dense sentences, and then short, snappy sentences is a really, really effective writing technique. So to be doing that really also helps with the coherence.
Mm. And kind of related to that, as something that a lot of students get bogged down in, especially in the heat of an exam where they're writing super quickly and they might not, you know, they don't, there's no spell check in an exam. How important is good grammar and spelling and punctuation? You know, is it something that, obviously it's something students should try their best at, but, you know, like I said, in an exam when you're writing very quickly, it might not be, the quality control might not be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult to keep all of these things in your mind, but again, I suppose back to the marking scheme, the M, the PCLM, the M stands for mechanics, and that is 10% of the grade. So you do have to be conscious of things like, you know, really obvious things, capital letters. I find capital letters for the names of, you know, poets and texts, things like that. Small things like that in terms of capital letters will kind of irk an examiner. So I would say watch out for that in particular. Putting the names of your texts or the names of the poems in quotation marks, that's another really simple thing that students rush and they don't do. And again, that's important. Obviously, I should say that if you have a spelling and grammar waiver, the 10% is not included in your grade. So that's separate for you. But do be conscious of full stops, capital letters, quotation marks. Apostrophes is another one. I think apostrophes, particularly in terms of talking about the, you know, the poets, Platt's ideas around, or Lear's, you know, whatever you're saying, try and use apostrophes. Apostrophes, I think, are a really forgotten piece of punctuation in our modern world, and it's something that examiners will keep an eye out for. Having said that, you know, examiners, they're not going to be overly harsh if you're missing a few commas here or there or anything like that. So I don't think you need to stress about it, but in particular, watch out for those quotation marks, apostrophes, capital letters.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be aware of little things like that that might kind of slip your mind with the time pressure and the constraints of the exam on the day if you're looking to really boost your grade. But just kind of for the student that's really looking for the H1, what kind of things would you say would separate a H1 paper from a H2 paper?
Yeah, this is such a tricky question. And, you know, I've had lots of students who've been H2 that like for a whole year, and they're saying, well, what's the difference, you know? So the difference between a H1 and a H2 really comes down to a couple of things. So the first thing would be the student's language and what I would call the fluidity of their answer. So that means how their language just flows really, really seamlessly. And to be honest, these people are usually readers, people who have read from a young age. And this sort of flow and coherence is something that comes from that sort of level of reading as a child and maybe as a teenager. So it can be a hard thing to learn, is what I'm saying. You have students who put in hours and hours and hours, and they're fantastic H2 students. But the natural ability comes usually from people who are readers. The second thing is the originality of thought. You know, when you're correcting a lot of the compositions, the ideas might be good, the language is good, But if you have somebody who's showing sort of maybe a new perspective on something or a really strong persuasive argument about something. So in terms of paper one, it's that sort of unique eye, unique perspective, that authenticity as well. Maybe the authenticity in the personal essay, if you're doing the personal essay. So it can be the ideas in the paper one as well, because particularly the essay is 25% to get the H1, and that really sets the tone for the rest of the paper. In terms of paper two, what makes those answers H1 instead of H2 is super laser focused on the question, and not just laser focused on the question in the sort of topic sentence, but throughout their paragraphs, they're referring back constantly, you know, and you see that this person hasn't just learnt notes off, that they're actually engaging continually with the question. So those are the slight differences between a student who, you know, really slogs and gets the H2 with the student who gets the H1.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. It's suppose like preparation, but even preparation before you even think of doing the Leaving Cert, it is kind of that reading and, you know, being in tune as well. Like you were kind of saying about with being in tune with the news and current events, like to include that in a personal, in like maybe any of the opinion pieces or anything, it kind of would give them that little bit of an edge because the outside reading.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know what you mean. It's a very fine line between H1 and H2 by the sounds of it. Like, because I mean, H2 is hard to achieve as well. So would there be any final exam tips for students or things to keep in mind that you'd like to share to close off the podcast?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of scaremongering happens around exam time. And I think that students really need to go in with a belief in themselves. That honestly is my top tip. Like, you're about to sit the exam for the next 3 hours and 20 minutes or 2 hours and 50 minutes. It's about showing off what you know. So I would say, you know, even if you haven't done the most amount of study in the world, go in with confidence. You know a lot. You've been sitting in a classroom for 2 years, listening to a teacher, writing essays. You are well equipped to sit this exam. Thousands of people have sat it before you. It's going to be okay. You know, use the opportunity to show off what you know, and really sort of try and go in with a positive attitude, because, you know, going in panicked isn't going to help anyone. So you might as well go in and think, okay, I'm going to do my best, and then put it behind me.
Yeah. Laura, thank you so much. I think that was, well, that kind of really closed it out well. I think all of the advice you've given has been very practical as well. Nothing was like unrealistic. You weren't telling everybody to revise things that they don't know already, or yeah, that they're, that yeah, it's going to be bad if they don't do X, Y, and Z. I think kind of like using what you already have is kind of the main thing you're kind of trying to drive home.
Yeah.
So it's been great to have you on the podcast, and hopefully we'll have you on again.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a million. Thanks, Luke. Thanks, Aaron. I really enjoyed it. Best of luck to all the students out there.
Yes, guys. Best of luck in your English exams, of course.